Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Okay, you guys are awake. It's a good start. My name is Maggie Hogan. This is Ancient Civilizations. History starts here. And Bob and I flew in from Dover, Delaware, and we're delighted to be here. Our two sons that have long since graduated homeschooling. The oldest is almost 24, and his name is JB. And JB just got out of the Army. He spent close to 5 years in 3rd Infantry Division. You might remember that from the news over the last 5 years, and we are very grateful to have him home again. You know, it's funny. I was talking to one of my best friends when JB first went over to Baghdad, and we were watching the news. In fact, we got cable TV because of the war, because JB was driving a Bradley in that initial Baghdad run, and we were watching the news, and we knew what division and so on that he was in. And I wanted him to paint, you know, his name on the back of the Bradley, but he said he couldn't do that. But you know, we watched him cross the Euphrates River. And it just struck me in a way that had never struck me before, that what we had learned in our homeschooling regarding the ancient civilizations was still a powerful and important piece of history that had direct consequences on our current events today. Now, when we were studying the Euphrates, I never pictured in my wildest imaginations that he would be driving across it in a Bradley. But, you know, God in his infinite wisdom had ordained that. And, you know, JB really had learned so much in school that and prepared him and taught him and was useful to him in an arena and in a way of life that we had never imagined. So you don't know where your kids are going to end up, and you don't know how important what you're teaching them in your homeschooling will be. Tyler is our youngest. He is a rising junior at Belhaven College, and I mentioned in my last workshop that Belhaven College is in Jackson, Mississippi, and if you're looking for a Christian school that has a powerful and very a creative performing arts a major and also a very strong pre-med program. They actually teach the inerrancy of the Bible in their biology classes. And Tyler is a theater ministry major, and it was very hard to find a school that offered that major. We were introduced to it by Diana Waring when a few years ago, her sons were both attending Belhaven at the time, and they brought Tyler out there, and he fell in love with it, and it's been a wonderful school for him. So if you have kids who are leaning towards something in the performing arts, we would really recommend Belhaven. Okay. I talked this morning on geography and history through literature. If you didn't get a chance to hear that, that might be a tape that would be useful to you, even as you're teaching your ancient civilizations. I'm not going to camp out in literature in this course, although we will certainly touch on it. I want to start with prayer, if you all would join me, please. Oh, dear Lord Jesus, we praise and glorify you, Lord. You are the Lord of history. You have set motion set events into motion, Lord, and you have a plan for us, and we are grateful and thankful for that. And Lord, we are also grateful and thankful to be able to teach our children about you and freedom in this country. We're able to homeschool in freedom in this country. Lord, help us to not take that for granted and to be active and aware about things that might curtail those freedoms. And Lord, right now, I just lift up each of these families represented here, and I ask for your great blessings, encouragement, discernment, wisdom for them, Lord, as they make their plans for this next homeschooling year. And all these things we commit to you in the precious, precious name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. I just, you know, when I was in school, I didn't know what history was. You know, you learn so much more when you start homeschooling. My kids would say, what's this? What's that? Why is this? And I'd say, I don't know. Let's look it up, because I didn't know. You know, I've got a college education, and what I don't know would horrify you. But what I've learned since I've homeschooled is at least a little balm to my soul that I still can be taught. Let me start with a definition. What is history? History is an orderly and systematic study. History is an orderly and systematic study of humans' activities in the past. History is an orderly and systematic study of humans' activities in the past. What happened? Whom did it affect? What were the results? How is it relevant to our lives today? And what does the Bible say about it? Why is it important to teach history biblically, chronologically, and I might add, enthusiastically? Some of you are here because you love history and you're hoping for a few little gems to take home, and some of you are here because you don't. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand. You know who you are. Why biblically? Why teach history biblically from a Christian worldview? And why not just pick up a secular textbook and teach from there? I learned Old Testament. Well, I didn't learn Old Testament. I learned some stories from the Old Testament in Sunday school as a child. I went to Sunday school until, I think we went until I was in fifth grade. I did not really, I grew up in a very nominally Christian home, and we stopped going to Sunday school when I was in fifth grade. But I heard some of the important people of the Bible in Sunday school. I heard about Moses and Joseph and Daniel, and the names were familiar to me. But, you know, in real school, where real history was taught, I never learned about those people. Those names were never mentioned. And you have to wonder after a while, how could it be that those names are only taught in Sunday school and you learn about all these other things in real school? And I came up with my own theory. I decided that we had parallel universes. It worked for me, and I came up with that the day that I was taught about cavemen in school. I remember it very clearly. I was taught about cavemen in school, but I was taught in Sunday school about Adam and Eve, and I didn't know who to believe. They obviously couldn't both be right, so or the only way they could both be right is if we had parallel universes. So I ran with that one. That was my thought process for many years. And that may sound funny, but that was just, you had to come up with something to make sense of it, and that was all I could come up with. But history really is his story. The Bible is true. The Bible is real history, and the Bible begins at the beginning, which to me is the obvious place to start. Additionally, history without Christ makes no sense. It would just be meaningless stories rather than the real events that they were and part of a master plan. Now, why chronologically? My history education, such as it was, was of the jumping around nature. When I was in grade school, I don't know about you, but I never had anything but American history. You know, I don't remember having anything else, but, you know, vaguely sometimes you'd hear about a Roman gladiator. Maybe, I don't know, Spartacus was on or something. You would hear these other terms and you'd sort of vaguely hear about these other cultures. But as far as I knew, the 13 colonies and the Roman gladiators all lived at the same time. How would I not know otherwise? Because everything that I was taught in history was taught as an isolated event. There was no before or after. There were no cause and effects that were ever discussed. And I don't know that in the elementary school that I went to that they had a master plan for teaching history. It seemed as if every year the teacher just taught whatever they wanted, because I didn't see any continuity from one grade to another, although it was always American. That part I knew. But history, even though it's messy and it's hard sometimes to follow it chronologically, sometimes you do have to camp out and look at one thematic strand and kind of bring it to its conclusion before you can go back. But there is cause and effect, and there are relationships between events. There are relationships between the people and the times. And even though it's messy, because we, mankind, we're very messy, God is not. God created order. And there is order to our history. There is a plan. And we can't get a handle on this progression if we don't look at it chronologically. Then when you look at the ancient civilizations, the first time I ever had a course that touched on ancient civilizations was in high school. Now, admittedly, I went to three different high schools in three different years, so if there was a plan in each school, I wouldn't know. But I did have one world history course that kind of breezed through the ancients. So I had this tiny little introduction to them, and I really could see no point, and I had no interest in studying them because I never enjoyed mythology, and that seemed to be kind of the main thing was, you know, their gods and their stories. But if we look to our own culture today, there are so many things that we can relate back to the ancients. Where did democracy, where did voting originate? Where did that come from? It came from the Greeks. What about the Olympics? Obviously came from the Greeks. Think about the Greek influence in our art, our architecture, our medicine. Think about Paul trying to reach the Greeks with their who had the polytheistic beliefs in his Mars Hill sermon. There are things about the Greek society that pertain to us, either biblically or in our own culture. Who built the roads all across Europe in order to further their empire? Who was that? All right, the Romans. These same roads were used to further the gospel. You know, God had a plan. Those roads came in great use. Why do American brides traditionally wear white and are sometimes, I don't know if anyone does this anymore, but I remember brides being carried over the threshold. And why do brides wear wedding rings? Where do those customs come from? Those all come from ancient Rome, actually mostly from ancient Rome superstitions. The threshold and the white come from ancient Roman superstitions that they had. Or traditions, I guess you might want to say. Who was the first emperor of the Roman Empire after Julius Caesar was slain? Does anybody remember? This is really, I'm stretching you. I know it's right after lunch. But who was the first emperor after Julius Caesar was slain? It was Octavian. He was later called Caesar Augustus. Who was the emperor that called for a census to be taken, requiring Joseph and Mary to leave Nazareth for Bethlehem in order that scripture might be fulfilled? It was the same Caesar Augustus. So here I learned about Caesar Augustus in my world textbook. And here is Caesar Augustus in my Bible. And never once did I realize we're talking about the same man. Ever. It was never in any way intertwined. Understanding the Assyrians certainly helped me better understand why Jonah didn't want to go there. Have y'all ever read about the Assyrians? They had a lovely habit of skinning their prisoners alive. How's that for a torture? Jonah not only was resentful of the fact that God wanted to save these evil people, I think he was terrified of going there. I think I would have run the other way. But it makes that story so much more vivid and so much more meaningful if we understand the civilization that he was dealing with. When I learned about Babylonians teaching my own children ancient civilizations, Daniel became much more real to me. And his stand and those of his three buddies became much more meaningful, and I had a better appreciation for what their stand meant. And all of these early civilizations had a direct impact on God's people, the Jews, the Israelites. So many times in secular books, and even actually in homeschooling materials, you'll find that when they talk about ancient civilizations, they're talking Egypt, Greece, Rome. Egypt, Greece, Rome. Well, a lot happened before Egypt. There was a lot of other civilizations also beginning to form at the same time period. And the Jews have had an incredible impact on the people around them and the world around them, and they still do to this day. You can't escape current events. What was important 2,000 years ago is still important today. And for me to have learned about Joseph and later Moses and the Bible and never have heard about them in my history class made them seem like fairy tale characters. It is a faith builder to realize that these were real people living in a real civilization. Okay, I've got a little quiz for you. You guys ready? You're awake? Now you have a 50-50 chance of getting the answers right. All right? Because all you have to say is before or after. I want to hear all of you say either before or after, not now when I ask you the question, before or after, okay? Was the Minoan civilization before or after Samson? Was the Minoan civilization before or after Samson? Not even a guess? Okay. 1,000 years before Samson. That's a lot of time. When you look at American history as starting probably, if you want to look at explorers starting in the early 1600s, late 1500s, that's what, 600 years ago? We're talking 1,000 years before. How about this one? Guess on this one. Did Buddha live before or after Nehemiah? I have one of each. Come on, y'all. Did Buddha live before or after Nehemiah? Okay, Buddha lived almost 120 years before Nehemiah. Now, how about this? Was Cleopatra before or after Aesop from Aesop's Fables? Did Cleopatra live before or after Aesop? 500 years after. Cleopatra lived 500 years after Aesop. Aesop was a contemporary of Daniel. Does that not boggle your mind? How come no one told me this stuff? I never learned this. Now, these individual pieces of information aren't, you know, life-changing or anything, but it illustrates how little most of us know about those early civilizations and that there really are valid reasons for studying them. So what I want to go over today, I want to give you a brief timeline. It's on your handout. This is just stuff for you to take home. I'm not going to go over the handout in any great detail. By the way, if you're listening to this on the tape, if you go to brightideaspress.com, all our handouts are online as well. I want you to consider, though, when you're studying the ancient civilizations, where are you going to start and who are you going to include? If you limit yourself to Egypt, Greece, and Rome, I'm here to tell you that you're missing out on a lot of the ancient civilizations. So I highly recommend that you start with creation and work your way forward. Then you're going to be hitting on, obviously, the Israelites and the Sumerians, Babylonians, Assyrians, you know, a lot of other civilizations and cultures. Also, there were things going on around the world at the same time. Other cultures were springing up in India and China and other places. So you have to kind of decide how much you're going to cover and how long you're going to spend on it. Now, I made a mistake early on. One of the first years I taught ancient civilizations, I spent an entire year on ancient Greece. Just so you know, ancient Greece in the elementary, junior high, and high school years is not worth spending an entire year on at the expense of so much other history. It's just not worth it. And I regret having spent that much time on it. So think about it ahead of time. Where do you want to spend your time? Some of you are in the enviable position of starting with young children, maybe kindergarten, first, second grade, and you're just getting into your first year of history. And you can start with the ancients and know that you have time to get all the way through. What if you have junior high or high school and whoops, you never did ancients? That's okay too, but you do need to get started on it, and you're going to have to move a little faster than someone who's got, you know, a first grader. So just bear that in mind. An overview course can easily be done in 1 year. If you have someone who is already had plenty of American history, maybe some their history as well, you might be able to spread it out and spend a year and a half to 2 years. I personally think that you can get up to the time of Christ in a year fairly effectively. Just don't camp out for, you know, 6 months on Greece. The problem is some of us like rabbit trails. Anybody here a rabbit trail person? Okay. Someone else in your family needs to have the big stick to remind you you've got to keep moving, because those rabbit trails can really be time consuming. What are your goals in teaching the ancients? It's important to know that ahead of time, and you need to develop your own goals while you're teaching. I listed on my handout some goals that were very important to our family. And the first one, and the primary one, was to ignite an interest in history and develop a lifelong love of learning. I did not want my children to have my schooling experience. I did not want my children to think history was about a bunch of old dead guys and war, because that's all I ever learned about. I wanted them to understand that it was really a part of God's plan, and that everything that happened not only happened for a reason, but had an impact on things that happened afterwards. I wanted my sons to develop research and critical thinking skills. That meant asking questions, having them look things up, teaching them how to research. I wanted them to learn and understand basic facts and even memorize some of those. I wanted them to have in their head a basic timeline of ancient civilization so that they would know before and after. Not that I expected them to memorize a bunch of dates. Some of them are important, but I'm not a huge one on a lot of date memorization, but it is important to know the before and after. I also wanted them to have a long-term retention of core information so that, unlike me, they didn't just learn it, take the test, and forget it. That was my way of getting through school. And then I wanted them to recognize where events happened, why events happened, and when events happened. So we were very big on including maps and timelines in our history studies. Highly recommend that. What resources and references can you trust for your history? Just know up front that all history written outside of the Bible is let me see if I can reword that. That just came out all. Everyone who writes a history textbook or a historical fiction or whatever, everyone has their own bias. You need to know what that bias is, whether it's from a textbook, from a Christian publisher, secular publisher. You need to know where they stand so that you go into it with your eyes wide open. You need to know who puts out the good materials that you can rely on. You need to know who does the research, who tries to rely on scripture. Those are important things. When you're using websites in your history studies, there are great websites out there, but there are also websites out there that are so full of misinformation that it's really damaging to use them. How do you know a good website from a bad website? There's not time in this workshop to go into that, but that is something that you can usually ascertain by knowing who put together the website and what their motives were. Anyway, those are just some things to think about. Obviously, with ancients, you want to have your Bible on hand. You want to have a good historical atlas on hand. And people, there are certain resources that every family should just own. I know all of us are on a budget of one kind or another, but a few things you just need to have. Outside of a Bible, obviously you need your dictionary. I won't go down that road. But for your history and your geography studies, you need an historical atlas. You need a Bible atlas. You need a current atlas at a high school or adult level. And you need a child's current atlas. And the reason that you need this variety is a Bible atlas is going to show you where places were during Bible times that are not typically covered in historical atlases. The shame of it is Rand McNally doesn't care where Joseph's journey was, and so it's not included in your historical atlas, but it's still important to have. Also, if I had seen a Bible atlas as a child, it would have given me confidence that the places mentioned in the Bible actually existed somewhere. As it was, I had never seen an atlas of Bible times, and those places were just hard to pronounce names. They didn't exist for me in any other way. A couple other resources that we've used over the years that we found to be very helpful for the ancients is there's a video. I'm sure it's a DVD series by now from Focus on the Family called "That the World May Know." They go through Old Testament and the New Testament times, and even though it's meant more for a Bible study or a Sunday school or something like that, we used it in our history studies because there were short vignettes filmed on location about the people who lived there and events that happened. And for my boys and the co-ops I used these videos in, that was very powerful. So if you can get your hands on That the World May Know, you don't have to necessarily run out and buy it. Your church library may have it, or you may be able to borrow it from somebody. We also used a family guide to the biblical holidays, or there's another book called Celebrate the Feasts. We found it very interesting and exciting to celebrate some of the feasts. We began doing a Passover and learning about that as we were doing the ancient civilizations. I've also used Christian textbooks and Christian resources as not as my main teaching text, but kind of as additional reference material. We used a book called Adam and His Kin by Ruth Beechick, which we enjoy. That's the story, obviously, of Adam and his kin. It's historical fiction, but she's done a very good job, I think, of making reasonable assumptions based on the Bible. We also liked materials from Institute from Creation Research. They have some good materials that help us to understand. I didn't get it, the whole dinosaur thing. That just went right over my head till my kids started asking me about dinosaurs. I grew up with evolution. It never occurred to me that the dinosaurs didn't live 6 million years ago until I began homeschooling and trying to study some of this stuff on my own. So ICR has some good resources that will help you there. And that's, again, part of the ancients. There's a book that we've published called The Mystery of History. It's volume one, and it goes from ancient civilizations, goes from creation to the time of Christ. And if I get time later, I'll mention a little bit more about that. There are some really good videos. You just have to kind of pick and choose. But sometimes if you can even show a video that gives you an idea of what that place looked like. For instance, when we were doing the Minoan civilization, I didn't know anything about the Minoans. It's an island. What, off of Crete? Or they were on Crete? I don't know. I didn't know anything about them. But we found a video at our library that talked about the Minoan civilization and what they had to offer and what happened to them. And it was fascinating. So kind of keep your eye out for those sorts of things. I wouldn't recommend that you buy these. These are supplemental resources that maybe you can borrow. We also found that my kids, if we could find a good board game or a good dress-up thing or something that had to do with that time period, that helped make it more real for them, because you're dealing with information that is very foreign to the way that they live now. And so you have to try a little harder. See, American history is easy to teach because it's so a part of our culture. You know, people have heard of Williamsburg, or maybe they've been to Williamsburg, or they've heard of this or that, and the toys and the games are not so foreign that they can't grasp it. When you get to the ancients, especially with younger children, it's a little trickier. I would suggest that you look for good literature from the time periods. There is lots of stuff on Greece and Rome. There is there is way more stuff on Greece and Rome than I think that we ever need. But there's good stuff out there, and there's a lot of junk fiction out there. Try to be discerning in what you're picking. And just as a side note, learned this the hard way, just because there are 36 age-appropriate books on Greece doesn't mean you need to read them all. You know, you just pick and choose what is good. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to my last workshop, I went into more about how you do that. Look for age-appropriate materials. If you're teaching your 6-year-old, your 12-year-old, and your 15-year-old, and you're all in the ancients together, you want to look for material specifically that each of them can get something out of. So maybe your older two are reading a G.A. Henty novel, and your younger one you're reading out loud to them from something, you know, at a much younger level. But I have to tell you, when I read out loud to my younger son, my older son, who's 5 years older, was always listening in. And I didn't make a big deal of it. I never said, oh, this is for both of you. You know, I'd read it to Tyler. And even though JB might have said, oh, that's too babyish or too young for me, he always listened in as long as I didn't make a big deal about it. So, and when I read out loud to JB, Tyler always got something out of it. So, you know, when your kids are years apart, you have to kind of, sometimes you aim high and sometimes you aim a little lower, but they both get things out of it. Look for books that give you the flavor of a period or a place, a gripping account of a specific event. And for that, an example I'd like to use is the story of Masada. Now, I did not give my life to Christ until I was in my 20s. And like I said, I grew up in pretty much a secular home. And so I had never heard of Masada. And I was a big reader, though. I read anything I could get my hands on. I was in the library one day, and I picked up the local library, and I picked up a fictional account of what happened at Masada. I wish I could remember the name of that book, because I can still remember how I felt when I read it. I can still visually picture the way they describe Masada and what happened to the people there. It's a powerful book, and that was before I came to know the Lord. I think something like that would be that much more powerful now that I have. But there are books that can really make an impact, so you want to look for that good fiction. Okay, let's talk for a minute about using timelines for the ancients, and I'm going to show you the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I don't bring projects that were, you know, handmade by professional homeschool moms who, you know, make professional projects. But this is real stuff that real people made, and I have to show you this because I made it. And see, here's what happened. I'll confess. I bought a map because the map said ancient civilizations, right? It was an outline map. You know what an outline map is? It's usually black and white, and there's nothing labeled on it. So I bought this outline map, and the top of it said ancient civilizations, right? You see that up there? And I have to tell you, I looked and looked and looked at this map, and I could not figure out where any of these places were. And I thought, I am really an idiot. I just don't know anything. I had my atlas out, and I was trying to match it up. And finally, I recognized the Nile and realized I was holding the map sideways. So my point is, what I went and did was I filled out a map of the places that we were studying that year on my own ahead of time, because I felt so ignorant about what we were getting ready to study. I felt like I needed to know something. And so for me to become more familiar with it, I filled out my own outline map. And it was very helpful to me. Did I just hold it upside down now? I did. Well, you see, now I'm backwards too. Hold on. Wait a minute. All right, there you go. Does that look more familiar? All right, you can find the Nile, right? See, and that's my other tip. When you're using maps, outline maps like this, find either a body of water or a peninsula or some obvious geographic feature, Italy, Florida, whatever it is, that you can identify. And from there, you have an atlas out that would have that place. And then you begin looking in concentric circles outward and trying to identify the places. So I did this for my own benefit. And then when my kids were older, they each would fill out their own map of places that we're talking about. Very helpful. And I also did my own timeline. It wasn't really on the back of it. I just do this to make it easier to carry. But I did my own timeline so I could understand a little bit more about the places that we were covering. Now, this was for a high school co-op. I didn't feel quite as necessary to be as smart when I was teaching elementary school, but you know, they hit high school and you feel like you better know something. So I began keeping my own maps. Timelines. Excuse me while I'm random here. I've got to go through and pull my timelines out. Here's a timeline. Here's a timeline. Here's a timeline. Okay. Here's my timelines. I have timelines from a couple different grade levels, so you can get some ideas. Now, there are a lot of different ways to keep timelines. I think especially for the ancients, keeping a timeline really helps put everything in perspective. One thing that you might want to do on your timeline is make the beginning of a creation, and if you're going to go up through the time of Christ, which is, you know, the end of the ancients, beginning of the Roman Empire, then put Christ at the end. And then someday when you've got this timeline together and you've got Christ, you know, at the end of it, then show your children where we would be today using the same spacing that you used on creation, so that they can see how much time there was from creation to Christ compared to how much time there is from Christ to now. It helps them, I think, get a better visual image. It's a little complicated. You're not going to, it's not going to mean anything to the little guys, but your junior high and high school kids will get that. When you're keeping a timeline, you can do it one of two ways. You can have one that's pre-made and you just point to it. There are advantages to that. The advantage is it's pre-made and you can just point to it. And for a busy mom, sometimes that's all the reason you need. The disadvantage to that is the kids aren't actually interacting with it. The more kids interact with the timeline, either making it themselves, pointing to it, putting something on it, whatever, the more they interact with it, the more they're going to remember it. If they're just looking at it, it's not going to stick in their long-term memory like making it will. So from young children, this is my 7-year-old godson. He had finished the ancients with his mom, and when I'm with him, I do history with him, and we're in a slightly later time period. We were moved up into we were in 200, 300, and this is on Constantine. But what we did was we had timeline figures that we made about the quarter of the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and then we printed on, we pulled it into Word, to a word processing program, and we have lines for his, supposed to be for his handwriting. What happened was, it turned out that, as typical, 7-year-old boys don't like to write with their hands. But he knew a lot about, I had read aloud to him about Constantine, and he knew a lot about Constantine. So I allowed him to dictate to me, which is what I generally do with my boys when they were younger as well. And this became a notebook timeline. And so every page in the notebook would be another picture and what he learned about that person. And then he could flip back through the timeline and see what happened first and second and third. So timelines don't always have to be linear. Linear timelines are nice, and that's the kind that you kind of strip across your wall or down your hallway. The problem I've always had with that is that if I had wall space, there was a bookcase there. So I either had to get rid of my bookcases or not do the linear timeline, and bookcases won. There are ways around it. Oh, wait, I think I have one. This is very clever. It's not on ancients, but it'll give you the idea. This is a linear timeline that's in a fold-up book form, and it's just craft paper and electrical tape, because I use electrical tape or duct tape for everything. And that way you can have that linear feel to it and you can fold it out, but when you're through, it folds back up into its little book and you can store it away. So you can get linear without having the wall space. Okay, the other kind of timeline is a notebook style for older students. I've got two high school timelines here I'm gonna show you. The first one, see, I have always had these grand visions that my kids would be artistic, that somehow, denying all laws of genetics, my kids would somehow end up being artistic. Obviously, it never happened because they draw like I do. And I always thought timelines should be beautiful. They should be visually attractive. They should have these hand-drawn pictures on. They should be lovely. But no, that just didn't happen. So I required my son the first year in high school to keep a notebook timeline that he had to put some sort of visual, something, make it something visual. So what he came up with was lots of things that he cut out of different places because there's no way he was drawing anything. So he does have a visual timeline. It's just not quite what I had in mind, but it worked for him. And this is here's a little key for you. When you're doing a notebook style timeline, the question is always, well, what happens when you get to those time periods? If you're keeping, you know, if every page is so many years and you get to this year and so many things happen, how are you going to fit that all in? Well, our solution was to keep the same date across the top and then add shorter pieces of paper across the bottom. And you can add as many of those as you need to. Y'all see what I'm saying? For you on the tape, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to be very creative in your imagination. Listen to me to describe this. I'm going to pass that around. That might give you some, if you don't mind. Oh, thank you. In fact, you know what? If you want to grab this, that brown one, and pass that around, and I don't know, if you want to pass this around. A few years later, I had given up on the whole artistic thing, and Tyler did another timeline. And what he did, I thought, was pretty clever. He came up with a color code system. If it was orange, it took place in Africa. Blue was Europe. Green was the Middle East. And purple was the Far East. He put the dates along the bottom and the events color-coded where they belonged so that we could see at a glance if it, you know, where it happened by the color. And then, of course, the dates were across the sides so we could see when it happened. So that's another style of notebook. Again, this is high school level here. And this last one is junior. It was actually, the girl was in eighth grade when she did it. Now, if you have an artistic child, this is doable. My children could never have done this, but some of you do have artistic children. This is a poster style timeline, and it comes blank, and it's they're typically laminated. This one happened to be a paper one, and it was for my Ancient Civilizations co-op, and they were required to keep a timeline, and she really got into her timeline. She kept it. She drew on it. She did cut out some things, some timeline figures. She wrote on it. And the result of this, I have to tell you, was, talking to her later, the result was she really had an incredible grasp of the before and after of events because she spent so much time on this timeline. Now, it started out as an assignment, but for her, it became a creative project that she looked forward to working on. In fact, for many years, she had this hanging on her room wall as a decoration. And I kept saying, Sarah, when you're tired of it, let me know. And finally, I think it was when she went off to college, I got the timeline that I've been coveting for all these years. But I don't pass it around too often. I'm going to pass around. If you just do me a favor and don't open it up, because this thing is really starting to, if you can just kind of look at it like this, it's really starting to fall apart. So timelines give you that sense of when things happen. If you can tie them in with a map, so they also see where it happened, it's a double bonus, especially the ancients, because we just don't know these places. Where was Persia? You know, when you go in your atlas and you look up Thebes, in your current atlas, you're not going to find it. You know, that's why you need the historical atlas. The names have changed. The boundaries have changed. Let me give you an example here. This is the atlas that I use with my kids up through about junior high school. I still use it now, actually. It's called the Student Bible Atlas. It's $7.95. But it has very clear, large, easy-to-read maps, and the names and the boundaries of places that just you don't get it that way anymore. It's the Kingdom of Saul, then the United Kingdom, the Divided Kingdom, the Four Empires. That's a nice one. It's got the Assyrian, the Babylonian, the Greek Empire, and the Persian Empire, so that you can compare the four empires where they were, because there's a lot of overlapping, obviously. Palestine, Jerusalem, but Jerusalem of the city, it's got the Joseph's journey, all that kind of thing. Very simple, clean, easy to read. And then when you get into historical atlases, the Rand McNally historical atlas is the one that we prefer. It's very detailed. This would be hard for if not impossible for an elementary student to use, but junior high and high school, and you as a teacher would find this very helpful. For example, the top map is the ancient world in 7th century BC. The bottom map is classical Greece, around 450 BC. And then it goes into things like Persia, the Han Dynasty, Alexander's Empire. Then it'll have routes to the barbarians or the Crusades, things like that. That's a kind of reference. And it goes all the way up to 2000, I believe. So you've got world historical data all in one place. Very, very helpful. Okay, so you've got your timelines that you're thinking about. Oh, I want to give you one other quick tip about keeping a timeline for elementary age children. Keep it simple. The simpler the timeline, the better. You don't need to put every person, every event that you ever talk about on a timeline. In fact, Ruth Beechick said in her book, You Can Teach Your Child Successfully, says that for children, timelines are not for pulling together the scattered pieces of knowledge as they do for us, because children haven't yet collected enough pieces of knowledge to pull together. But what they do is provide a framework in which they can put pieces as they learn them. For this framework purpose, timelines should be so simple that children can memorize them. So keep your timeline for the young children simple. All right, moving on to some projects. I'm going to show you a couple things that we've made and pass them around and maybe give you some ideas of things that you can do. I want to start with student notebooks. No matter what you're using for your curriculum, if you can have your students start putting together information that they're learning into a notebook, maybe in the beginning, maybe it's one notebook for your whole family. Maybe as the kids get older, the older kids begin keeping their own notebook. But it's a way for them to express and communicate what they've learned. Our first notebook was, first notebook of ancient civilization is, and looking back, it's pretty cheesy, but this will give you an idea of what we started with. All we put in here, this is ancient Greece, we put in photographs of things that we did. I knew what curriculum we'd used, so the notebook was just things that we did to learn about ancient Greece. So we made chitons. Actually, I don't sew, so somebody else made the chitons. I can duct tape a costume together pretty well, but I don't sew. We had a feast. We ate Greek food. We did the Olympics. Those kinds of things. It was just very simple, and the kids each kept their own notebook of things that we were learning. And in their notebook, they had copies of pictures of themselves doing it. Now, fast forward, Tyler in there is probably about kindergarten, first grade. And then this is Tyler's notebook when he was, I don't know, eighth or ninth grade. And this was what he had to keep in his notebook was what resources did he use that year to learn from. So he had to basically, whatever reference or videos or books that he read, he had to keep a timeline. Now, I pulled the timeline out, and it's in one of his notebooks separately, so you won't see it in here. And then he had, for every time period, he had to write a summary paper. So he had to research and write a paper, and those are all in here, as well as whatever projects that he did, that's in here, and all his map work that he did is in here. So I'm going to pass that around. So this is an idea of somewhere eighth, ninth grade level notebook. I think most of it is still in there. Now, for younger kids, one of the fun things that we did was when we were doing the ancients, our homeschool support group had a geography fair once a year. And not only could you choose a place, but you could choose a time period. So we would choose, for example, ancient Rome or ancient Greece or whatever we were studying and do an exhibit on that. Now, this is not my child. This is somebody's child who did ancient Rome. And I picked this out because notice the Legos. Legos make wonderful educational supplies. If you don't have Legos and you have boys, you need to get Legos because they can build any kind of fort, any kind of city, any kind of village, any kind of anything with Legos. As long as it has something to do with history, I'm all for Legos. So the Legos are in there. I also have some pictures of some projects that we did. One of our very favorites was measuring Noah's Ark. Now remember, this is the ancients. Well, when you're reading about Noah's Ark, aren't you kind of thinking to yourself, yeah, right, like he could fit all those animals on the ark? Have you ever thought that? I know I have thought that. And it wasn't until I began reading some material from ICR that explained how that happened and then got the measurements of the actual ark and went out in our yard and measured it. Do you know how big Noah's ark was? It was huge. And so we actually had the kids. Our property is almost, it's close to 3 acres, and it's a long rectangle. And Noah's ark was the whole front long part of the rectangle and almost all the way to the back of our property. And the height of Noah's Ark, and there's a picture in here of our barn, the height of Noah's Ark was taller than our barn. And that was a real eye-opener for the kids to see how big this Ark was. On the back, you'll see some pictures of making mosaics, sewing costumes, archaeology. Try to get a little archaeology in your ancients so the kids can understand how they came to know about what they know, how scientists find that information out, how historians use that information. It's a very interesting study. You can just read a book or two about it. And so we did a little archaeology project in there as well. If you have, this was our co-op, and all the kids had to do a project, and one of the girls loved to dance. She was she's a ballerina. And so for her project, she researched and looked up Jewish dancing. And she actually taught all the kids a dance called the Hora and explained the customs and what the importance behind the dance was. So that was something that really appealed to her. Let them do projects that are appealing to who they are and what their interests and their hobbies are. The same co-op, on the flip side, you're going to see a picture of the temple that Mike built out of foam board. And he went to the craft store and bought all kinds of, I never knew this, but the craft store, I guess people make miniatures, lots of miniatures. So there's all these miniatures at the craft store, and he decorated his temple with all these miniatures. And he researched the Bible so thoroughly that when he was finished doing, he had a nice little replica of the temple. And his pastor at a very large church that they attend was so impressed with it that they put it on display in the church library. And Mike was able to give a talk about what he learned about the importance of the temple. These projects can take you all over the place. This project was done by a girl who is 9, Tara. And my motto is, with history, you should be able to eat it and play with it. Because my boys want to eat and play with whatever we did. So we always cooked the food and we always tried something to play. Now, in this case, Tara was struggling with learning vocabulary words about ancient Egypt. And her mom was requiring her to learn the words and Tara was not learning them. So I was talking to her mom and I said, why don't you let her create a game that teaches the meanings of these words? And so in making the game, she'll have to learn the words. And I recommended that they use Bingo. Bingo is a great game that you can use as a basis for a lot of different games. So Tara came up with a game called Mummy Go. This is all her own work. She has four boards, think mummy cards, not mummy cards, bingo cards. And each bingo mummy card has different vocabulary words that she needed to learn. And none of the cards have the exact same words as the other card. And they're all mixed up. All right. So she's got her cards. And then her little twist on it is she has something called Pharaoh cards. And the Pharaoh cards are question and answer cards. So the mom would read the cards. For example, okay, the boy Pharaoh of Egypt who died at age 18, what was his name? And you would say King Tut. And if you had King Tut on your card, then you got to take a hieroglyphic chip that she has little hieroglyphs on, and you put it on King Tut. And by the time you're through reading the cards, you're going to learn a lot of this vocabulary. And the first person to get five hieroglyph chips in a row shouts out, Mummy Go, because this is Mummy Go. So anyway, she learned the vocabulary words, and her younger brothers and sisters all learned the vocabulary words as kind of a side effect. When kids invent their own games to teach somebody else something, they have to do the research. And in doing the research, they're going to learn themselves. Can you pass that around? And that can be used, something like that can be used across the board, all different age levels. This is called a lap book. Have you all heard of lap books? Some of you have. I love this. This is a lap book of ancient Egypt. This family was using the Mystery of History. The oldest child was probably nine or 10. And it's a family lap book. The mom probably did the handwriting, I would guess. But what they did was everything they learned about during this particular, this was an Egypt part of Mystery of History, they put in the lap book. For example, houses were made out of mud bricks. Egyptians can sleep on the roof when it's hot. And then they make... I need Vanna White. Hello. Can you be Vanna for me? Flip things up and turn things over. The neat thing about a lap book, she's got her photographs right in there. Everything that they learned about that particular time period, they were able to somehow fold or flip or hide or put in there. And what happens is the kids have so much fun making that, it's a way for them to review the material that they worked on. So as they learn the material, they put these little things aside, the photographs and whatever. And at the end of that time that they were studying, they put it all together in a lap book like this. And again, I've seen this done with great success from very young children through. I've seen some high school lap books that would just make you amazed. You can do it at all different ages. You might want to pass that around as well. Those ideas come out of Tammy Doobie's book called The Ultimate Lap Book. And this is a book that we carry. And if you have children who are crafty or if you would like to make your learning a little more hands-on, I really recommend that. I want to talk for just a second of a great research tool for all ages. We use this in the ancients quite a bit, and that was making ABC books. And I mentioned in the last workshop, I showed an ABC book done by a high school girl. This was on ancient Greece and Rome. And what she had to do was for every letter of the alphabet, she had to find a word that correlated with something to do with ancient Greece and Rome. She had to define it or explain it and then come up with an illustration. Now, what she did for an illustration was she scanned in pictures from books that she was using. The one thing that she did not do that I took away points for, Anna, okay, if you wouldn't mind passing, these are identical, so you could take one side, one to the other. She did not cite her resources, and so at high school level, your resources should certainly be cited. But anyway, in doing so, when you're putting together an ABC book, whether it's a six-year-old doing ancient Egypt or a high school level doing ancient Egypt, they're all looking for words that start with each letter of the alphabet that they can then explain and illustrate. Now, I required the kids to do a project every 9 weeks or every 8 weeks. And Tyler, at the time, was probably 13, and he decided to do an ABC book on the book of Esther. Now, I was really surprised because we hadn't spent much time in Esther, although Esther is in the time period, and her husband, King Xerxes, that was part of the whole Battle of Marathon and all of that. But that was what he chose to do, and that was fine. Well, the night before co-op, Tyler had finished his project, and he was sitting there, three-hole punching it. And I said, oh, Tyler, I think I've got a little notebook you can use to put that in. So I got my notebook. It's my old day planner. My day planner had fallen apart, like it was really falling apart. And so I gave him that because it seemed like it would go with Esther. And he was showing me what he had done. And again, I told you, Tyler's not artistic, so he's got a lot of things that he cut out and found. And, you know, his artistic scribblings, you know, that makes it artistic, I guess. So, you know, he's got E for edict and G for gallows and I for inner court, J for Jew. He got down to the end here. I wonder what he's going to do. Let's see. He's got V for Vashti. W is willingness, X for Xerxes. Anyway, so he went through and he put this book together. And this young lady from that we know from church, she was probably about 17 or 18 at the time, came over. Now, she was a new Christian, did not grow up in a Christian home. And she said, Tyler, what you doing? He says, oh, I'm putting together my ABC book on Queen Esther. And she said, well, who's Queen Esther? Well, you know Esther from the Bible, Book of Esther. And she goes, well, I've never heard of that. And she said, tell me what it's about. And I listened to Tyler tell the entire story of Esther, almost chapter by chapter, sometimes verbatim, all the way to the end of the book that book of the Bible. He had absorbed the whole book of Esther because he had spent so much time studying it for this ABC book. And when he was through, she said, that is an amazing story. I'll have to go home and find it in my Bible. And I was amazed. And then, because I'm a good homeschool mom, I said, why don't you do one for every book of the Bible? No, I didn't. But I want you to know, that was the first thing that ran through my head. But what an incredibly valuable experience that turned out to be. And I would highly encourage you not to do it for the book of Numbers, Leviticus. Anyway, it is, pick a short book, I guess is my point. But it was incredibly valuable. And an ABC book or a 1-2-3 book can be used in such a wide variety of sources. Okay, a couple more real quick. Time. How much time? Have five minutes? Okay. Other things we did real fast. I'm going to pass this around. Here's the timeline, costumes, mosaics, art projects. I failed arts and crafts at summer camp. Did you know you could fail that? And yet somehow my kids still graduated from homeschool. Anyway, here's some more projects in here that you can look at. Would you put the overheads on for me real quick if you don't mind? Just whatever random order that we have there. And just start with the next one that's in that pile. Yeah, and whatever it is, I'll talk about it. Oh, yes, it's somewhere upside down. This is a timeline notebook style for a 3.5 by 5 inch index cards. And you can buy those little binders at Walmart with the little cards already hole punched. And the picture's on one side, and then there's a little summary on the other side. And it's a great little review tool. It's something you can take the cards out and mix them up, and the kid has to put them together in the right chronological order. You can do all kinds of things with those. Oh, that looks better. Okay, go on to the next one. We're going to fly through this. This is upside down. Sorry, I might not have put them there in the right order. This is a wall-sized timeline with lots of figures. Again, notice the electrical tape. It comes in a wide variety of homeschooling designer colors. Next one. This is a book-style timeline, sideways. Electrical tape down the middle so that you've got the top and bottom you can work off of. Next one. Did I mention I like tape? This one is, oh, this is one that we made, and it's on corrugate. And the corrugate is two-hole punched, and then it's just you can use a little metal fastener, or you can use a ribbon or whatever. But it's kind of like that brown one I showed you that pulled out. This corrugate, you can also pull it out, but you can keep adding to it very easily, and then you can fold it all back up together. Okay, next one. I don't know what's here. Oh, this is a timeline map combination that we did in our Sunday school class. And again, so you've got the visual up ahead, and you've got the timeline down below. Next one. And this is Sarah's timeline. We have that here, so I don't need that one. And, oh, my crazy map. Okay, next one. and part of the ABC book, V's for Voting. And the next one.
Excellent. You can just turn that off for now, but when we're finished, if you'll turn that back on, because people might want to copy some of those. Very rapidly now, my last couple of minutes, let me show you this. If you're looking for a curriculum that's already been put together for you so that life is easier and you can cook dinner at night, always found that a plus. We published an ancient civilizations curriculum called The Mystery of History, and this goes from creation through the time of Christ. It's done three lessons a week. For example, week 21 goes from Ezekiel. The project is making an edible scroll. There's also research projects at the high school level. The second week is on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There's a fire experiment and researching the meaning of your family name. And the third week is on Buddha, because Buddha was a contemporary of Ezekiel. And so it ties in secular history and history that's going around all around the world, from South America to India, with what's going on in the Bible at the same time. It also includes timeline, what to put on your timeline. And the geography of that week is estimating the mileage between Jerusalem and Babylon. Then another week would have maybe the story of the Trojan horse. It's the same time period. The story of the Trojan horse is the same time period as the Book of Ruth. Then Socrates, and he's a contemporary of Ezra and Nehemiah. And then Hezekiah, and he's a contemporary of the time of the Hopewell Indians were building their mounds in Ohio. So this book walks you through it. The lessons are written. The activities are there. There's a quiz every week. The quiz reviews not just what happened that week, but it goes all the way back to the beginning of the book, kind of like Saxon Math for History, where you're always hearing about these people and places again. Because some of those names, if you just hear them once, you're not going to recognize them when you hear them later on. It also includes your geography, outline maps, tells you how to keep a timeline, and it talks about keeping, well, somewhere, it talks about keeping the 3.5 by 5 inch index cards and how to do that. Someone has come up since we've came out with Mystery of History, they've come out with an arts and crafts pack. If you want to do some serious craft projects that match the Mystery of History, there's a craft pack now. And if you don't want to photocopy all the maps and the quizzes for your children, out of the book, there's a CD-ROM of all the reproducibles, so you can just print off as many as you need each time you need them. And then a wonderful gal named Amy Pack, homeschooling mom, who's a professional artist, she's come up with timeline figures that match every figure in each of our volumes of the series. You can buy them in cardstock and cut them out, or now she has them on a CD-ROM, so you can make them very small, like for a notebook-style timeline, or you can enlarge them all the way as big as the paper that you're printing it out on, which is a great way to use the timeline. So if you're looking for something already done, I'd highly recommend that. The Historical Atlas, the Bible Atlas. And if you want a great little resource reference book, we love, this is the only Osborne book I carry, but I carry it because I love the time. It's a world history dates, and they do the times in columns so that you can look at a glance at Asia, Africa, Europe, the Americas, and you can see in the column what's happening when, and it's got great little pictures. And then every other page is a large spread on something important that happened in that time period. So you've got some nice color photos to go along and supplement whatever history curriculum that you're using. But I hope that whatever you decide to use, that you will really consider teaching it biblically, chronologically, and with enthusiasm. Anything that you want to ask me about, I'll be at my booth, which is Bright Ideas Press. And if you want to pass the projects up to the front before you leave, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you all so much for being here today.